It's time to find balance and be refreshed here on Every Heart, Every Woman.
Every Heart, Every Woman.
Get ready for uplifting music and inspiring interviews.
Every Heart, Every Woman.
Let's get motivated to move forward as we share our life experiences. Host, Carla Nivens.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show. Before we jump into our interview, we're going to set the tone with a little bit of live music. This is a hymn. This is Just a Closer Walk with Thee. It's performed by a group that I am in called For Change. Sit back and enjoy.
Just a closer walk with thee.
Let it be,
dear Lord.
Let it be.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show. And I have my good friend, Vicki McMurray, joining me as co-host today. Hey, Vicki.
Hey, sweetheart. It's good to be back. Good to see you.
I was going
to
say, long time no see. Can I say that?
Yes.
Since a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for being here, Vicki.
You're welcome, sweetie.
Everyone, our radio show is a program of Love Ministries, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You can find out all of the great information about Love Ministries from their website, loveministriesbuilds.org. And we are going to talk about marriage.
Yes, we are.
Today.
I'm excited.
This is going to be a great conversation. We are welcoming two of our friends, Greg Medlin and Candace Winslow. Greg is a pastoral counselor, a licensed professional counselor, and licensed marriage and family therapist. He founded the Marriage and Family Group, PLLC, and specializes in working with couples and families who are going through difficult times, and they want to strengthen their family and improve the quality of their relationships. Greg resides in Dallas with his wife, Ruth, and they, I was going to talk about Molly, but Molly
is no longer with us.
Yeah, I just realized that. I'm so sorry.
Well, thank you.
But welcome, Greg. We're so glad that you are here. We're so glad that you are here to share with us, and we're truly looking forward to this conversation.
Great. Thanks for having us.
And we're also welcoming Candace Winslow. And Candace holds a Master of Arts in Christian Education, a Master of Arts in Christian Education from Dallas Theological Seminary. Did I get that out right?
You got it perfect.
Okay. So she served on the staff at Highland Park mm-hmm. United Methodist Church in various roles, where in one of those roles, she taught my children, who are now teenagers now.
Right,
but
right.
We're still 25.
But I'm still young and
yes.
cute and hip.
Yeah, we're still 25. Those kids can do whatever they want
right.
to do.
That's right.
And so so Candace, she served in various roles in coordinating the domestic violence outreach ministry and serves as a Bible teacher in leading the children's ministry where she taught my children. Candace resides in Dallas, Texas with her husband, John, and they have two children, Caroline and Grant. Welcome, Candace.
Thank you Yay. For having me,
It's
y'all.
Actually a welcome back.
A welcome
yeah.
back.
Because we
Candace was here. Yes.
With Christian Women's Job Corps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Several months ago.
Yes.
That is wonderful. So welcome back, Candace. And Greg and Candace, they wrote a book together called Getting Me, The Secret to What Your Spouse Really Wants.
I know. I need to have Tim listen to this.
Okay. So this is wonderful. So let's jump right into this. My first question, I love this, The Secret to What Your Spouse Really Wants. I feel
yes.
like doing my fingers like this. Rosewood, I'm going to figure out the secret to what you really want.
That's right.
During this interview. So tell us, Greg and Candace, how did you all get together? I'm assuming you all met at Highland Park because we all...
That's correct.
We all went to
Highland
church
Park.
There, right?
Yep. Yes. So how did you all get together to write this book, Getting Me?
Well, it's a great story that reflects, I think, terrifically on Greg and probably not as well on me.
And
the
that
moment
is
that Greg,
impossible.
No, it's true. When Greg first came on staff and he was introduced at a staff meeting, was introduced as a LPC and as mm-hmm. a MAFT. And at that time, I was coordinating our domestic violence ministry mm-hmm. at the church. So I was the person that women, when they found themselves in a DV situation, I'd be their first person to talk to. And I recognize that because I don't have those credentials, mm-hmm. that really my ability to help, to be a conduit for help for a woman had a really low ceiling. And so after Greg was introduced at that first meeting, I made a beeline across the room after the meeting was adjourned to introduce mm-hmm. myself and to say, hey, I'd really like to work together because of what I do. And little did we know that that meeting, which was several years ago.
It's probably 13 now,
yeah,
I think.
Is that right?
Yeah.
13 years ago would lead to us writing this book and really open up a conversation and a continuing conversation that we even have currently about marriage and the intersection of psychology and theology as it comes to marriage.
Yeah.
We need lots of training with that before we get married.
This is really good.
Yes.
So Greg, tell us about the book. What will couples and or people or individuals learn as they're working their way through the book?
they'll really learn how to communicate better and mm-hmm. more succinctly in their marriage. Mm-hmm. We took six what we call conversations that people should be having on a regular basis in their marriage and teach them actually how to have those conversations.
Okay. Yeah. So have you all found that?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Because this is that big C word. So we're talking about communication in marriage.
Right.
Okay. Here we go. So have you all found that these six conversations that we should all have, because all of us in the room are married.
Yes.
That we should all have, are these conversations that people just don't know to haven't had or struggling through these conversations?
Really, a combination of all of those things is there's never, and I'm literally using that word never, mm-hmm. been a couple that has sat on my couch that does not tell me in the first session that they don't communicate well.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's interesting.
Yeah, and it's not that they don't communicate well. They're just not really hearing each other mm-hmm. or listening to mm-hmm. each other more mm-hmm. than anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we sat down and kind of figured out, how do we, in a 150-page book, you know, help couples actually learn how to do that? And then we try to make it as easy as possible. It's a very prescriptive book. Mm-hmm. Do this, don't do that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's giving them a tool more than anything else that if you follow this roadmap, mm-hmm. it really does take a lot of the fear and anxiety out of it.
That's good.
And helps them.
Yeah. So is this a book that you suggest for people that are already married or people that are getting married? Or is that a question that comes up often? Both of you all are smiling.
Haven't you taught a class, though? Have you guys? It's premarital?
Yeah. Several.
Yeah. Or is it premarital or currently married?
Yeah, different things.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
different things.
We work together on the church's premarital program.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But then we have hosted several.
That's what I thought.
Classes on the book and how to do marriage. And again, what I think is so important about this book is it does take the psychology and theology and puts it together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so looking at almost every aspect of marriage from those two concepts.
Yeah. I'm wondering, what's an example of, when I hear psychology and theology, what's an example of how those two would come together to strengthen marriages?
Sure. So, you know, when you look... one of the most profound things that happened to me at seminary was a professor in a class, and this was a counseling class that I'd mm-hmm. taken within seminary, said, I want you to imagine the most beautifully wrapped gift you can imagine in your mind. And mm-hmm. he spent like 2 minutes having us go through this kind of meditative exercise. How big would the gift be? What would it be wrapped like? And whatever the gift is, and you get to decide what the object is, it's a priceless object. So for like 2 minutes, you're imagining this gift. And then he concluded the exercise by saying, now that gift, what if I told you that gift is your spouse? That is who God chose for you, and this is your greatest gift on earth.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, with a priceless object, if I asked you, how would you treat that? What would you do with it? Where would you place it? How would you talk about it? If it was an object, so mm-hmm. whatever that might be, you would think, oh, well, I'd put it on this high shelf, or I would only let certain people touch it. I might have special lighting for it or whatnot. And he had us apply all of that to our marriage. And it really reframed for me, and I'll be celebrating 25 years of marriage later this calendar year.
Wonderful.
Like, how do I look at John? Do I look mm-hmm. at John mm-hmm. as my husband who I don't really, you know, who I just take for granted and I just kind of, he's my companion? Or do I look at him as this gift?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at relationship, I think there's clearly psychology behind it. But I think there's great theology behind our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at our partner just not as someone to satisfy me,
mm-hmm.
but when we look at our partner as this is the person that God has given me
mm-hmm.
to, if you will, work out my faith, to exercise my faith. And I say all the time as a Bible teacher, if my faith does not look its best with John, Caroline, and Grant, my mm-hmm. kids, then my ministry is a sham.
There you go.
So, I mean, I think it interfaces. But I will tell you, I think most believers don't, I think after you've been married for a long time, you don't think about your marriage that way. You don't think mm-hmm. about it theologically.
I'm raising my hand. I mean, I'm the one, I think I'm the only one, I've been married twice, so I totally understand that.
Yeah. But it takes both people. And
it does.
And that's why the title is getting me. I think, you mm-hmm. know, we spent a long time, for a long time, our working title was Six Conversations, but then through the genius of Greg at early morning moment that I'll let him tell the story about, this title came to being. And this title, I think, really unlocks a little bit of what the book is about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were at the Bewitching Hour where we had to have a title for the book, and we were working under that. And we were with our editor. It was a weekend with our editor to go over the book. And we were supposed to meet, I think, Sunday morning. It was coming back Sunday morning about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. And that night, about 3:30, I woke up, and it just hit me what the title had to be. And I still today, you Google it, and this is the only, I'm still surprised mm-hmm. there's never been a book called Getting Me mm-hmm. before.
Mm-hmm. It's a really strong title.
Yeah. Well, and every, again, I'm going to say every, okay, so that I'm probably lying. Maybe it's not everybody that mm-hmm. sits on my couch, but the vast majority of people sitting on my couch at one time or another very early in therapy will say that, you know, be so frustrated because you don't get me. Mm-hmm. And then what really hammered it home was when I would start hearing people who are having affairs sit on my couch talk about, my affair partner gets me, but you don't. So it's such a powerful title mm-hmm. that everybody uses. I think from a familiar standpoint, just reading the book, you know, the title of the book, people start to realize that is what I want from
yes.
my spouse.
Yes.
And so then our work became, what does getting me mean?
Right.
So what does that
mean? I mean, my head, I'm just, I got a million things because I'm thinking about what I was like 20 plus years ago. When I met my first spouse and what I was wanting him to get me for and what I wanted to get out of being with him. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, fulfill needs that I had and to make me feel better about myself. And I'm going to change you because you need to be changed. And so it yeah. wasn't, and there wasn't a lot of communication that was real healthy, but it was more about you need to fill me up instead of me be filled up with God.
Amen.
And I can see this whole, and he's a therapist, as we were talking about before earlier, before we recorded, but there wasn't, it wasn't about what you're talking about at all. So it's amazing. And then when I fast forward to where I am now, to someone I've been married to 15 years, my second marriage, love him to pieces. But you've actually used that analogy before in a Bible study. Candace has been my Bible study teacher over the years. And I don't know if we used it as a precious gift was our husbands or spouses, but I remember that analogy and later talking to you about it. One time we were having coffee and thinking, I do need to look at it this way, that yeah. he is a precious gift and not to be not to be taken advantage of, to honor it
yeah.
and to nurture it.
Yeah.
I think about nurturing all the time when I think about my kids, but I don't think about nurturing yeah. all the time when it comes to my spouse.
Yeah, that's so right.
And, yeah, we take our spouses for granted
we do.
All the time. And, you know, human beings are very selfish, narcissistic creatures. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tend to think that I marry you for how you can meet my needs. I really don't go into marriage thinking, wait a second, I need to meet your needs. But
right.
I think when you take the theological component to it and add it to it, it does make you look at it totally differently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
I totally agree with that. That when we get married, it I say it like this, that it pokes holes in who we think that we are.
That's exactly
who
right.
We think
beautiful.
We are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We think we're great people and all this. And, you know, come on yep. over here and marry me.
Right. Yeah.
But really, the Lord wants to teach you a lot about your spiritual walk with Him and mm-hmm. about your faith. He wants to deepen your relationship with Jesus Christ so that you can actually look at the other person's needs and serve the other person's
And can
needs.
We just say big amen? Because that really does happen. I really
that's
happen.
Right.
God,
that
you
happens.
Are pushing my
you
buttons.
Are poking
he leaves,
holes
yeah,
in
big
who,
time.
Who I think
exactly
I am.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So getting me, which literally I love that title. I think that's perfect. Getting Me, the secret to what your spouse really wants. So we are saying that you're saying through this book that in order to get your spouse that you can walk through these communication tools is what we'll call them.
Sure.
You can walk through these communication tools and then what's needed from each person, how do they need to approach these yeah. six conversations.
Yeah. Well, the first chapter of the book is a very honest and painful reflection of a place in my own marriage where John and I did not get each other, mm-hmm. which landed us in therapy, and how we got out of that. The mm-hmm. second chapter talks about what Greg sees in his office, and then we really explain what does getting me mean.
Mm-hmm.
And in short, not to give away the whole thesis of the book, but Getting Me says when you are in conversation with anybody, frankly, I believe this is not only true for marriage, but for any relationship. Your job is to hear and understand what the person is saying so that you know them better.
Mm-hmm.
And so these six conversation, these tools, requires each person to sit and talk. And instead of formulating your response, mm-hmm. instead of coming up with your argument against, that the whole purpose of the secret of what your spouse really wants is for you to hear them mm-hmm. so that you understand them, mm-hmm. so that you know them better.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what's so awesome is that when we really listen to each other with the sole objective to understand their position and to know them better, in turn, they feel loved, appreciated, and respected.
Mm-hmm.
So I use this silly example in, I think it's the first or second chapter, we talk about sushi. Say one spouse loves sushi, the other one hates sushi. What happens in, I think, a typical marriage is if you have a point of disagreement, if you love sushi and I hate sushi, and my husband were to say, hey, let's go for sushi, I'm like, I'm not going for sushi. I hate sushi.
Mm-hmm.
It's gross. It's disgusting. And all of a sudden, something stupid and innocuous like that can become a big fight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead, getting me suggests when my husband might suggest, hey, let's go to sushi, and I hate sushi, that I pause long enough to say, well, tell me why you like sushi so much, and what is there anything else on the menu that I might like? Like, mm-hmm. if I stop, instead of like, he is wrong and I am right on this topic of sushi, and
mm-hmm.
again, that's innocuous and silly,
right.
to illustrate the point, then all of a sudden, at least for a moment, he's feeling like I love him enough to at least hear why he likes sushi so much. And again, silly, but I think you understand what I'm driving at.
I think that's really good. And I guess why you're saying that this is how we should approach every relationship.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how many times at work are we exactly like that?
Yes.
At work, in any of our relationships, when you say something, if I disagree with it, Greg says this all the time, in Western culture, immediately, whether I realize it or not, I'm formulating my response.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to tell you why you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to be right, and so therefore you're wrong.
Right.
In Eastern culture, it's more of meeting in the middle, the yin and the yang, if
mm-hmm.
you will. But it's fascinating when you really communicate with somebody. If you say something I totally disagree with, if I can suspend my own emotion, if I can live by the spirit and be self-controlled enough to be interested and love you enough to understand, why do you think that?
Right.
Why do you love sushi so much? And
mm-hmm.
again, silly example, but it makes it easier to wrap the brain around.
Mm-hmm. That's hard to do.
It's very hard.
It's really
to do.
Hard to do. And if I could just add one component,
mm-hmm.
it's you know, Candace mentioned this, but it's really where we go wrong so often in marriage is we think that we have to agree with each other.
Hmm.
And I'm trying
yes.
to get you to agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get me to agree. The whole concept of getting me is I don't have to agree with you.
Right.
I just have to understand why you think that way, why you want that thing, why you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, that seeking part that really differentiates
mm-hmm.
this from what normal people are going to do every day in their relationships.
So understand where you're coming from and respect that.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Enough
mm-hmm.
to continue traveling.
But that you don't have to agree.
You.
So out of curiosity, I go back to the whole saying, men are from Mars and women
mm-hmm.
are from, whatever that
mm-hmm.
saying is. So, you know, I'm thinking about how relationally, so my husband, I do know when we've had disagreements, he wants to be heard, and I work much harder as time has gone on over the years to listen more carefully and really understand what he's saying. But I do think if I'm not agreeing, then it's not okay with him. Whereas I'm totally, so I don't know if that a male female thing, but it's just interesting to me because I'm like, well, I do understand what you're saying, but we're not going to agree.
Right.
And that is okay.
That's absolutely okay. I don't know if it's a male-female. It's definitely almost every relationship.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's just mm-hmm. interesting. And he has these, and I've had it too. I mean, it's certainly not all him by any stretch, Tim, if you're listening. But it's just interesting because I know at times when I wanted to be heard or I didn't think I was being heard, and then he said what, you know, his piece, I'm thinking, well, you don't agree with me. You're wrong.
Right. That's what we tend to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's to Carla's opening question a
yes.
few moments ago. What do both spouses need is when both spouses, when John Winslow
yes.
and I are both in the getting me
yes.
mode, if you will,
yes.
and we have disagreement,
mm-hmm.
it's so freeing when we're having a disagreement and he says X, and then I stop and say, let me tell you what I just heard you say.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you say this. I heard
mm-hmm.
you say that. And this is what I know about you. And then holding that so respectfully
yes.
and gently before I make my next response.
Yes. Yeah, that's really good. So let's press the pause button right now. We're going to take a break. And everyone, we will be back in just a minute.
Every heart, every woman.
Every Heart, Every Woman, the show where women find balance, peace, and inspiration. Now let's get back to the show with your host, Carla Nivens.
Well, welcome back to the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host. I have my good friend, Vicki McMurray,
yes,
co-hosting today. Hey, Vicki.
Hey, sweetheart.
So Vicki and I, we're having a really wonderful conversation mm-hmm. with Greg Medlin and Candace Winslow. They are the authors of Getting Me, The Secret to What Your Spouse Really Wants, which I just love that title. I can't get over it. So I want to ask you all a question. So And this is a personal question. So Roosevelt and I, we've been married for, I'm not the one that's really good at remembering.
I don't remember
dates,
either.
But I think it's 19 years.
I would say 19 or 20. It's one of those.
So we've been married for 19 years. And we would say that we're good at communication. We would say that when we have transitions in life, anything that changes over, we have learned that that's when our communication tends to break down. And I think that we've learned it's because we probably haven't talked through all the different details. So I think this and he thinks something else. So but we do things. We do weekly dates. We do family mm-hmm. dinners. We do yearly vacations. We love doing goal setting. Mm-hmm. So even for a couple who kind of feels like, okay, we don't have blowups all the time. What can we get out of Getting Me, The Secret to What Your Spouse Really Wants?
I think if everything's as good as your marriage, I think it's always going, can we make it better? Can we do it differently? One of the chapters in her State of the Union is where we actually talk about how do you do the business side of marriage?
Mm-hmm. And most people, that's a big piece.
Most people don't think about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we're really striving for is how to make you feel closer and more connected.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of opportunities that couples don't use on a daily basis to really connect with one another. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to teach you how to do that on a better basis. So,
And I would argue that probably couples that feel like they have good communication, I would think, because they feel like, okay, we don't need to focus on this. We may need this more.
Yeah. I'll tell you, when I've received so many blessings in doing the work with Greg, and I think when I walked into the process, I was like, hey, my marriage is pretty good. You know, we've already had a kind of our hard time. We went through therapy 5 years in. We're good. But I realized the more I dove into this work with Greg, where it could be strengthened and improved. And I'll take date night as an example. Mm-hmm. John and I have gone on a bazillion dates, but mm-hmm. our first chapter in the book, and I think we get a lot of traction around this first chapter, it's called Intentional Date Night. Mm-hmm. And what we'll claim is that if you go to the movies or if you're going to the dinner or you're going to basketball, baseball game, football game, whatever, that's not an intentional date night. That's mm-hmm. a date night, mm-hmm. but that's not an intentional date night. So we write this whole chapter about how do you date your spouse with the objective of discovering something new about them. And what is so awesome, this just happened this week, John shared something about himself that I had never heard. And I've been with him 27 years.
Isn't that so cool?
It is so
that
cool.
Is very
like,
cool.
How do I not know that about you? Mm-hmm. And it was a little small, innocuous fact, but what I think happens is we get so accustomed, oh, well, we've been together for so long. Mm-hmm. Right. I know him. We're doing well.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately we write the book for that connection, as Greg said. And the conversations, I think, really drive that.
Well, intentional day now, if I could just say something. I mean, when I tell people the difference of intentional date night versus regular date night, I said one of the rules of what you don't do is you don't talk about the kids, you don't talk mm-hmm. about problems in the marriage, mm-hmm. you don't talk about work, and you mm-hmm. don't talk about anything that could be controversial that will cause stress within the marriage. Now,
what do you talk about?
That's
exactly right.
Enjoy being together.
100% of people,
I'm being
married
sarcastic,
couples, say that.
We've walked through moments in our marriage like that before, and you're right, it is a struggle when there's already controversy about something, kids, work, and then you sort of look at each other and there's crickets, because it is hard to and it is work to get past that and just go, hey.
Yeah.
you know? And I'm here with you, and it's just, you know,
so Greg, what do you suggest? Tell me that list again.
You don't talk about the kids. You don't talk about work. You don't talk about problems in the marriage.
Okay.
And you don't talk about anything that's controversial.
Right. Okay.
That would, you know, impact the marriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think about when you first started dating, mm-hmm. you couldn't wait to learn about the person and new things. And so you didn't talk about that. But we get married and we quit being curious.
We quit
discovering.
Yes.
We think we know everything. And I teach the sex and intimacy component of the church's premarital, mm-hmm. 6-week premarital program. And about 3 years ago, there was a guy, you know, kind of over-talking me, and I kind of heard what he was talking about. And I looked at him and I go, okay, what did you just say? And the poor guy thought, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. mm-hmm. But he said, well, I think I know my fiance really well. And I go, well, just curious, how long from the first date to when you're getting married? He said, 18 months. I said, well, okay, on scale of, you know, 0 is you know nothing about your spouse, 100 is you know everything about your spouse, how well do you think you know your spouse? Or this fiance, mm-hmm. what number do you think this person threw out?
He probably said 100.
Yeah, he probably said the highest number.
He said 90.
Yes. Oh,
I was
18 months.
I was like dumbfounded. I just could not believe that somebody would actually think that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I took a poll of everybody else in the class. Everybody was around that number. And I go, y'all are delusional. I said, you could be married 70 years and you're not going to know
everything.
But see,
yes.
And instead of looking at that as a negative, that's a positive because we are growing and changing.
Right.
There's so much excitement to that, but we don't. We're conditioned not to look at it that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Right. That's a great reminder.
I think what we're saying, I looked up some scriptures and I thought, this conversation reminds me of Ephesians 4:2-3, which says, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and in the bond of peace. And I think that so applies to what we're saying, mm-hmm. because we do. We start off very cocky, mm-hmm. and we think we know every single thing.
Yep.
And then year one comes and, you know, thank the Lord, you know, if we make it to year one, then
right.
year five,
he didn't put
you know,
this
everything
toilet seat
is,
down,
yes,
he left his shoes
everything,
out.
And we've stopped with the, because, you know, everybody said, especially if you're raised in church, hear all these questions, go sit down, ask each other these questions, mm-hmm. make sure you know each other before you walk down the aisle. And then we put all that stuff away mm-hmm. and we never get back to actually trying to keep that unity, actually knowing each other, actually still engaging each other.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
It's hard work.
We talk about
that. Mm-hmm. If you've been sitting on my couch as a couple for 20 sessions, every single session I'm going to fit this in where I look at the couple and go, hey, just in case you haven't figured out marriage is hard work,
mm-hmm.
because
right.
it really is. Now, mm-hmm. it's not drudgery work, but it's hard intentional work.
Mm-hmm. Here.
And humbling.
Yeah. It's providential you bring up Ephesians because that's what I'm personally studying and teaching right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of Ephesians, Paul is saying unity, unity, mm-hmm. unity.
Yes.
And that the purpose of all of our relationships, mm-hmm. and especially, I believe, in marriage, is to build the other one up.
Mm.
And just today, I was reflecting on how many organizations I've been a part of or relationships I've been a part of where really when I reflect back, I'm like, you know, there was more tearing down
mm-hmm.
than there was building up.
Mm-hmm.
And what does building up mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think building up means this is how I see God in your actions. This
mm-hmm.
is why I think the Lord John put you and me together.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I admire, I respect in you. And I think what happens in marriage is, this is Greg's phrasing and I love it, we forget our manners.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, another wonderful tip that I learned from Greg is that when I have anxiety in my life, I immediately want to get rid of that anxiety. And who's the first person I dump that on?
John
Winslow.
Yes.
That's right.
Same with Tim.
And so I forget my manners. Mm-hmm. I want to dump my anxiety. And slowly but surely, it's the small erosion of unity.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I think scripturally that I God has selected me to be John's helpmate, which mm-hmm. many women do not like that verb that noun rather in Genesis 2. But when you look, that helpmate is that influencer,
mm-hmm.
that one that my job is to build up John mm-hmm. in such a way that he can be the most godly man. And his job
mm-hmm.
is to do the same for me.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul will talk about that in Ephesians 5, OPS. That's our goal. And
yes.
But the ability to do that starts with our mind, starts with our heart,
yes.
starts with our tongue.
Yeah. You know, that makes me think of this, that we took a family cruise over Christmas, over New Year's, right after Christmas to New Year's. And Roosevelt was really the one that pushed for that. I thought, you know, I've taken my break after Christmas because at church, Christmas is crazy.
Yeah, it
is. So I've taken my break. Well, now what I'm going to have to do is take some days off instead of getting back into it. So I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is really the best time. Let me tell y'all, we had the best time possible as a family, all four of us.
Praise God.
And so when I got back, the Lord was really on me. So every time I was in my day and thinking of that cruise and thinking of all four of us being together and that experience that we had together, how refreshing and refueling it was, I sent Roosevelt a text to tell him thank you again.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
That made his day every every time. And
yeah,
that's what that is. Like building
up.
Yes. Building him up and telling him how much I appreciate him for forcing us.
Because we want like that too.
Yeah.
No, but I was just going to say, watching you, Carla, when you're telling that story, I just saw this giant smile on your face, which reminds me that I bet you did a lot of this on a cruise, is laughed with each other.
Yes. Yes.
That is an incredibly bonding thing. It releases the same hormones and chemicals in our brain that sex does.
Yes.
And I tell people all the time, because when couples sit on my couch for premarital, I'll ask them, okay, why are you guys getting married? And inevitably, they're going to say they love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell them, that's a stupid reason to get married. It is a stupid
reason.
It's not enough.
No, it is not.
Most people are confused what love is.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, marry the person that you want to spend time with, that you look forward to. If, if you can do anything, you're going to choose that person.
Yes.
And marry the person you laugh the most with. Because I believe if you do a test of who your best friend is, I guarantee you laugh the most with your best friend.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah.
Because it's incredibly bonding, connecting.
It is. Yes. Yeah,
it's intimate. Laughter
good.
Can be so intimate. I mean, that nailed it on the head with Tim. He makes me laugh all the time.
Right.
But,
you
know, I love that you talked about just a second ago saying, you know, love should not be the reason you get married, because it's so small a factor in the big piece of a sustaining marriage. And I kind of I like talking or us talking about how as we listen to our spouses and we're talking to each other and learning something new about them, that that's one piece of it, listening to them. I want to talk a little bit about, can I have the book really quick?
Of course.
I know, I remember Candace was talking about the sex chapter, so intimacy. And I know we're a Christian radio show. We're not going to go way off the rails with this. But, you know, I think it's important that that is an area that you talk to your spouse about. Do you have, is there a G-rated version of how you do that?
Sure. Well, first of all, most people fight about sex, but very rarely talk about sex in marriage, because it's this difficult, we make it this difficult, embarrassing, hard conversation. And when talking, especially in the sex and intimacy class that I just did, you know, first instruction I give women is, I know there are two or three things you're never going to do sexually. You need to own that, and then you need to share that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to be fighting about that throughout marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's like, you tell me right away you're not going to do these things, I think that's really important. And then guys tend to think, okay, well, nobody else has ever complained about the way I am, so of course you're going to like it too, without realizing if you just move your hand here or do this, it's going to be more pleasurable for me or more connecting for me, or more importantly, it will make me feel safer with you.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's super powerful.
I was going to say, when my parents, they
we've talked
funny
about
is,
this.
So they did all three of us. So I've got an older brother and a younger brother. So my parents, they talked to us about sex. So I always say we started off laughing about sex, because I mean, how hilarious is it for your parents to be the ones
But most parents don't have that conversation.
They don't have
with
that conversation. No. And you know what my dad said was so freeing. He was like, he got a blank piece of paper and we didn't know it was blank. And he was like, okay, I've written down everything you need to know about sex. Here it is. Open it up. It was a blank sheet of paper. It was blank, you know, all the way around. He was like, it's you all. You're going to enjoy it. You need to talk about it. You need to, you know, experience it. Keep talking about it. And know that the Lord is pleased with that. He's pleased with the conversation. He's pleased with the enjoyment of it. Go have fun.
How cool is
that?
Because,
fun.
Again, I think
so
the message a lot of people get about sex is it's this bad thing.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I'm kind of sweating in this conversation.
But to some of the adjectives that Greg used about the book in general, the sex chapter is called Pillow Talk.
Yes.
And there is truly like prescriptive, here are things, questions to ask each other. And it's to Greg's great point, not when you're fighting about it, but just in a very calm, in a conversational way, let's talk about sex outside of the bedroom before it's a moment when we're about to have sex, but in a way that we can discover each other.
Right.
And
I think, listening to each other.
Right.
And Carla, you're incredibly blessed because I don't know that most of us have that kind of upbringing where
free
to talk.
Yeah, your parents knocked it out of the park with that.
They're wonderful people, and we're very thankful. I want to ask this question. Why do you all think it's so difficult for us to communicate?
I think it's because it's embarrassing in ways of it's intimacy. And so, you know, I've done a handful of marriages. And when I talk in doing a marriage, I always talk about that. Our job is for our spouse is to hold their intimacy sacred, and we don't. So when you open up to me, you share something with me, you have given me a lot of tools to use that against you, hurt you, make fun of you, reject you. And that's what happens in every marriage. And so I'm going to use my hands.
Yes.
Our listeners
listeners
can't see
this. He's using his hands to explain.
But every marriage grows apart. Right. Healthy marriages get here and they come back to here.
Yes.
Unhealthy just keeps growing apart.
Right.
And every marriage grows apart in intimacy. That's how you're going to get hurt. That's how you're going to grow apart from your spouse, is intimacy, which happens through communication. And when we do it poorly, we up the chances that we're going to really hurt one another.
Yeah. And I think that's brilliant. And what I would add to that is I think communication just in general is so hard because Greg's already said it. It's also, I think, biblical. We are self-centered. We are self-focused. We are self-absorbed. We are self-protective. We're self first. And so ultimately, when I see you after not seeing you for a long time, Carla, seeing you, Vicky, ultimately the real me, I just want to talk about me. And I want you to meet my needs, and I want you to pay attention to me, et cetera, et cetera. So take that concept and put it in your marriage, right?
Right.
And so I think communication is hard because it's two self-centered people coming together. And again, it is that concept of the secret that your spouse wants is they want you to sit there and hear them. And they want you to really seek to understand them. And even if you don't agree, which we've already established that that's not the objective, even when you don't agree, what you're wanting to do is demonstrate a posture that shows how much you love and appreciate and respect them.
So I'm thinking, I hear those two answers. This is what comes to my mind. I think this is why, and then you all can tell me if I'm completely wrong. To me, that sounds like this is a reason why the Lord loves the covenant of marriage is because he knows it's going to take us out of ourselves, is going to help us to grow, is going to help us to get us to a place where we are even more usable in the big scheme of life to be used for his glory. If we in our homes start thinking, okay, it's my job to build up someone else, to serve someone else, to hear them, to meet their needs, then that person is more equipped
to go out
outside of the home, to go into the world and to do something great for the kingdom of God.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. I think a beautiful marriage is a miracle because above all the issues that we're talking, not issues, poor choice of words, all the things that you go through and the journey that you walk through and serving somebody else.
Yeah.
I think you're 100% right, Carla. I can experience my own experience, and my marriage is nowhere near perfect. I'm nowhere near perfect, nor is my husband. But what I've experienced in 25 years is the covenant that we have made to one another, that God gave me John, and God has used John to make me better for him, capital H him, for the Lord.
Yes.
And I believe that God has used me to make John better for the Lord. And I'm old enough now and married a long enough time now to go, wow, I am fully better equipped, better able, better positioned to glorify God because of John. And not because of me. The 1994, when I got married, I thought I was really greatly equipped because of me. Like, and John was just going to be like a sidecar. You know what I mean? Now I'm like, oh, I see the covenant fully expressed. But to Greg's earlier point, John and I are very intentional about that. And some days our marriage is a shining star, and other days it's not. But it's persevering and being resilient and staying with it.
Yes.
And I going back to what you're talking about, just when you are serving your spouse, when I feel like he's doing that for me, I do walk out of the house a little brighter. I walk out a little chipper. Yeah. I mean, I'm ready to go out and serve because I know I've got he's got my back.
That's right.
And that he believes in what I'm trying to do or what my goal is for the day and vice versa. But it is so easy to get derailed. It is just so easy. And especially the longer you're married.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. So this is how my mind thinks. You know, we as adults, we learn all of these things. And my mind thinks we want to be able to pass these along to our children, our grandchildren, our nieces, our nephews, so that they can, I don't know, maybe have an easier time. How do we communicate in our marriages in a way that the young people around us see and they kind of maybe learn some things that we didn't learn?
Well, I think that's the key, is let them see you be that couple. Let you see them be that person. It's so important that, you know, when I talk about marriages, I said the greatest gift you could ever give your children is show them a healthy marriage. And that is such a greater gift than how much money you're going to leave them, what car you're going to buy them under 60, what school you send them to. But people lose sight of that. And then, you know, the percentage of healthy marriages is really, really tiny. It's about 15%. And so you're to be able to learn how to do that and then demonstrate that for your children, because y'all have kids, I don't, you are influencing your great-grandchildren's marriage today.
That's good. That's good. Influencing our great-grandchildren's marriages
today. I'm nervous now.
That's good.
Right.
Well, here's the thing. I think, you know, this book, Getting Me, is a tool that we can always use. Because, Greg, tell us, I'm sure there have been people that have come to your office. Have you ever had a head scratcher where you thought, I don't know about y'all, but then they get it back together?
It has been a long time. But I think that it's, you know, I'll start off telling people that I can't fix a marriage if one of four things or any of these four things are present. And it's addiction, adultery, abuse, or mental illness. Right. Those have to be treated in order to fix the marriage. And then what they have to have present is the willingness to do whatever it takes. And I emphasize that, whatever it takes. And here's the kicker. Actually doing it. People will commit to do whatever
that's
it takes,
work.
But so very few will actually do the work.
Yeah. Right. That's tough.
That's good. I mean, marriage is work. That's what we were saying. Let me read this last verse, Colossians 3:14, and it says, "And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." If we just concentrate on loving each other, we love the Lord, and if we love each other, we serve each other, then we can really, go through this study, go through these conversations, and get everything back on track. So Getting Me, where can we get it? We can buy it everywhere?
Amazon.com. And we also have a website that you can purchase the book as well.
Okay.
But Amazon.com, Getting Me by Greg Medlin and Candace Winslow.
All right. All right. Well, thank you all so very much
thank
for
you.
Coming in today.
Thank
this
you for
was
having us.
A great conversation. We truly appreciate
thank
your
you.
Time. Truly appreciate you. So, everyone, our program, our radio show is a program of Love Ministries, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Go to their website for all of the great information, loveministriesbuilds.org. Thank you so much, Vicki.
Thank you, Carla.
Everyone, I'm your host, Carla Nivens, and we will see you back here for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show next week.
Every heart, every woman. Every heart, every woman. Every heart, every woman. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.